Okay, thanks, Eric. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today to talk a little bit about the past and the future world of pedology. I feel obligated to talk a little bit about the title since it's a little unusual. I happen to like to listen to Jimmy Buffett, and I also happen to turn 60 this year. Gives you a new perspective on life. So anyhow, enough of that. So what I'm trying to accomplish, or my part of this presentation, is I'm going to give an overview of the important developments that have shaped pedological research. Actually, over the last 75 years, I actually figured it up this morning. It's very close. So at any rate, and there's a lot of laundry lists, so please bear with me. I'll try to skim over them or concentrate as I need to. Probably one of the bigger things that have had an impact on the way we do business is the advent of new and better and classy and slick laboratory tools. It's given us the ability to take to support observations that we make in the field with hard data, so we know that what we're seeing, what we've seen, we can support with numbers. It's led to things like mass balance techniques to quantify gains and losses of mobile constituents and soluble constituents in different parts of the soil. It's allowed us to look at weathering trends, mineral speciation under different environments, those kinds of things. Use of the microscope in pedology has led to some interesting things, both optical microscopes through thin sections as well as scanning electron and transmission electron microscopy, to get us a better understanding of distribution properties of void and PED coatings, some insight into the pore structure within a soil as it might affect soil behavior, and just the general morphology of some of those features. Since micrographs are photogenic, we see clay coatings here in this image. This is some stuff that's kind of old that was actually used yesterday in a different presentation, but this is precipitation of calcium carbonate in specific horizons. And this bottom one is an SEM micrograph of a siliceous microfossil that was very useful in documenting parent material differences. We've used stable carbon isotope analysis to evaluate paleo environments, both temperature and vegetation, origin of certain features, and some sources of parent materials and other constituents. I added databases almost as an afterthought. The whole world of databases has revolutionized the way we do business, because everybody's data is somewhere on the web, and so you can look at it, model it, understand it, evaluate it, etc. Because pedology is primarily a field science, I'd be remiss not to talk about field tools. Again, it's allowed us greater quantification of selected properties. It's allowed us to develop relationships of these properties across the landscape, particularly some of the more rapid non-destructive techniques. I don't want to take credit or blame for everything I'm saying here. I asked a couple of my mentors what their perceptions was. And it was interesting. Both of them talked about the Munsell soil color charts as a significant change. They actually only started being used in about 1951. So before that, it was grayish pink or whatever. There's no quantification. Aerial and satellite imagery certainly revolutionized the way we looked at landscapes. geopositioning systems revolutionized the fact that we now knew where we were when we were looking at the landscape. Exactly. Geophysical tools have given us the opportunity to understand certain properties of soils, the spatial distribution of that better. Both ground penetrating radar and electromagnetic induction. Borehole permeameters are helping us understand some hydraulic properties. Wells piezometers, the list can go on and on, but they've revolutionized the way we've done things. A few examples: a good old aerial photograph with a soil map. That's the basis for the Soil Survey of the United States, or aerial photos. I worked in a county in central Texas mapping soils 1,000 years ago. The adjoining county had a soil survey, but it was on plain paper. It was not on a photo base. So all the lines were put on with an alidade and a rod, if you follow that kind of stuff. So it's certainly a revolution in terms of mapping soils. It's also a revolution in terms of just understanding where we are on the landscape and what's going on. When we move to the satellite imagery world, it gives an opportunity to see things in a broader perspective. And if you're better at manipulating bands and band ratios and those kinds of things, it can give you some very distinct understanding of what's there. This is a Landsat image. That's the Missouri River and the Platte River, where they conflude just south of Omaha, Nebraska. We had a little flood there this summer because of the massive snowfalls in the mountains, and so you can see the water. Back to colors. Mike will explain everything there is to know about that color pattern. Since I think this is his slide. At any rate, it's an important property that needs to be quantified and understood. EMI, electromagnetic, not only can we can see the salt distribution in soils that have salts across the landscape. Certain parts of the landscape have more than others. Same with radar. It's kind of voodoo, but most of us can see that there are differences there, and it's the ground truth that makes the tool valuable. Let's talk a little bit about concepts that have shaped it. Yenny's model of soil formation in 1941, certainly important. And what it did in the world of pedology, it provided us a framework to study and understand things a little better. You can't solve, the model's never been solved, probably never will be, quantitatively, but at least it's a nice framework. And many, many studies have been based on the fact that the assumption is we got five factors, we can fix four of them, vary one, and understand the effects of that. So we can talk about time, landscape position, vegetation, climate, whatever, as long as the other four factors are the same. Another concept that kind of revolutionized things was the advent of geomorphology and soil geomorphology. Milne in 35, that's actually 76 years ago, but who's counting, put forth the concept that soils were laid on a landscape. We worked with that quite a bit. There were a number of soil geomorphology studies sponsored by the National Cooperative Soil Survey in the 60s and 70s that gave us a lot of information on soils in certain parts of the U.S. There were long-term projects. Budgets were different than they are now, and so there was a lot of useful information. But again, it gave us a concept and framework for understanding certain things about soil distribution, genesis, and behavior. The 800-pound gorilla. Soil taxonomy in 1975 was introduced. We can talk about classification for a long time, but the concept that I want to put forth is that the pieces of the classification system, the diagnostic horizons, the features, the other soil properties, became the foci for specific research questions in terms of development of those features, development of soils in general. Genesis of diagnostic horizons have been subjects of many, many studies. Several of them, I'm not going to read the list. Field identification of features has been a fruitful area at times. Landscape, continental, and global distribution of certain soils with certain properties, certain taxa, have certainly been done. Age relationships, on and on. It's had a major impact on the way we do business. So let's talk about the most recent kind of shift is digital work, more quantitative. Alex McBratney put forth a different model that's kind of based on Yenny's, the ScorePan model. And the main difference between it and Yenny's model is actually part of what you can do to understand the soil is look at the properties of the soil, which is this S as opposed to that one. And the other one is where is it in geographic space? It has an impact. So there are global projects to try to understand and map soil properties that are ongoing using very sophisticated techniques. But if we have data from some source, either a soil map, point data, however, we overlay terrain, other kinds of data, climate, whatever is available. The goal is to produce something that's a continuous function. This is soil depth. It could be clay content, pH, organic matter content that's different. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Craig to talk about the future.
I saw Larry's title. I was going to see if I could figure out a way to get Margaritaville or a cheeseburger in paradise in the talk, but nothing came to mind. But so I'm going to follow up where Larry left off. And do you have kind of three areas where I think there's some future potential for pedologic research? And I'm by no means the expert in all of these areas or any of these areas. And there's a lot of very qualified people in other areas of pedologic research ongoing. But I think picking up where Larry left off, the field of digital soil mapping has emerged recently. And it provides a means to really enhance the way we present and understand soil information, and a way to extend our pedologic knowledge to areas that don't currently have soil information. As well as touch briefly on where pedology could fit in with this concept of global soil change and how soils function in what folks are now calling the Anthropocene, now that humans move more sediment than natural processes. We've become a geologic force, and soil information is key to understanding those interactions. And then finally touch on kind of the working towards the model of everything, this really getting to quantitative process-based modeling of pedogenesis. We're still a long ways away, but we've made substantial progress. And kind of with the computing tools and informational tools we have now, we can make substantial progress. And each of these components encompasses both strong applied and basic research components. So we need the basic research components, but we can use those tools for very applied applications. And so in terms of digital soil mapping, it's a means to provide a statistical characterization of those soil landscape relationships that Milne talked about in the 30s. And it's really a way to use existing data, what McBratney calls environmental covariates, what other folks would call soil forming factors, but we have quantification of topography and vegetation and the geology through remote sensing indices as a way to then use that information to predict soil properties. And there's a digital soil working group, digital soil mapping working group in pedology, and actually there's a symposium going on right now with a number of high-impact soil digital practitioners of digital soil mapping, and I think it goes on for most of the day today. And just a couple of examples from research out of my group, and I'll plug, I think I see Matt Levi in the back. This is from his PhD work, and he's giving a talk on this stuff later today. But where we're using some of these digital soil mapping techniques and basically using elevation information and remote sensing data and through some iterative data reduction techniques, basically coming down to those layers that account for all the variance in the landscape, and you can produce these beautiful maps that look like they effectively capture the soil distribution on these different types of landscapes. And this was done for an unmapped area, and here's, after they came through and mapped, independent of the work we did, we overlaid the final soil survey lines on that classification, and you have this beautiful correspondence between the two. So it suggests we really have the means to try and capture some of this landscape based on these data tools. And the other power is that within each map unit, then, you then characterize the spatial variation that we know exists in those map units, but in the traditional way it's presented, it's one or two soils and a couple of components in a map unit. This provides a way to parse out the spatial distribution of that. And we can use that kind of information to design sampling schemes to get to the quantitative prediction. Can we use these same layers that classify the landscape to predict soil physical and chemical properties? And this is just an example of a sample design that captures the distribution, the variation in those layers that went into that final classification. And you can then go out and field sample and use those layers to then predict it at relatively high resolution. So this is an estimation of clay content over an area of about, 10,000 acres or so, where we have 5-meter resolution estimation of surface clay content. And you can get relative proxies for the confidence and the error you have in those estimates, and so you know which portions of the landscape you understand and which portions that you don't. But it provides an improved, what I think would, in some cases, an improved tool for particularly the research community and folks interested in veg, soil, water, and vegetation interactions. So the next area where I think there's some potential and pedologists can contribute is in this area of global soil change, and Dan Richter's been a strong proponent of this. There's also now a SSSA working group, a cross-divisional working group on this topic, and there's a paper in press that was led by Dan that'll be coming out in SSSAJ here recently. But really one of the keys of that is to highlight soils and soil information in this era of change where humans have substantial impacts on the Earth's surface environment, and to try and engage then in new modes of communicating this information about how humans interact with soil systems. And one example from my research program where we're trying to get at this is really starting to couple, Larry mentioned databases. There's there's 49,000 PEDONs, I think, now in the National Soil Survey Lab with a substantial amount of characterization data. That's a tremendous resource just waiting to be utilized. And so we're tapping into that and coupling that with other tools to try and get regional predictions of soil water deficit and status as a way to really improve drought monitoring, particularly in the semi-arid and arid southwest where water is a key issue. And this is just an example. Here's the southern basin and range region that stretches from the Mojave to the Chihuahuan Desert. Can't really see here, but there are over 500 PEDON locations with characterization data out of the National Soil Survey Lab. And so working with climatologists and a soil physicist and a remote sensing specialist, we're looking at the historical climatology of the area. So we have 20, 30 years of climate data that we can then use, coupled with the soil information through a modeling paradigm, something like a HYDROS-1D or look at soil water dynamics, to then predict transpiration and above ground productivity that we can validate with the remote sensing information. And finally, towards the model of everything, I know as pedologists we often haven't worked in a numerical modeling framework, but there's opportunity to work with folks to do that and couple that with new tools, high resolution imagery such as LIDAR, as well as the digital soil mapping to really get at linking short and long-term processes. I'll just move on. This is just an example of a simple numerical model that uses a rate of soil production or conversion of bedrock to soil and the relative uplift rate to predict soil depth. This comes out of the geomorphic research. And we can couple this with a factorial approach where we can quantify the climatic forcing out of that Yenny equation in terms of the net primary production and effective precipitation, and then use that empirically to predict this P0 term. So now we have both uplift and P0 that couples geomorphology and this factorial approach to essentially model soil depth. So given an uplift rate and an environmental forcing, we can model depth on the landscape. And this is just applying that framework in a semi-arid watershed outside of Tucson where we can predict soil depth at 1 to 2 meter resolution using the LIDAR data, and I'll click through these quickly. This is another tool where we can then, with the LIDAR information, characterize with high resolution from the top of the canopy down to the bottom to the bedrock with the modeled soil depth overlaid. So we now have very nice description of this continuum. And this is the last slide where I think we can really begin to couple these, both the statistical classification of the landscape with the process-based models, as well as then empirical measures. And we can do the iteration and really move towards that explicit quantification of pedology, which is, again, that model of everything in the dream of take our mental models and put them onto paper. And I'll end with this, that all of this indeed requires us to engage with the broader earth science community and funding agencies, and that there's a potential and there's a need for collaboration with other earth scientists. It's amazing how little pedologic information they understand. So we need to be ambassadors and work with those folks.